This is the official EFL podcast.
Hello and welcome again to the preview show. Joining me this week to look ahead to the weekend's action are Sky Sports' David Prutton and Don Goodman. And we're also giving a debut this week to former Birmingham and Wolves defender Roger Johnson. Firstly, though, I just wanted to start to look at the Carabao Cup and your reaction, guys, to the draw. A few David versus Goliath ties in there, so let's get our own David's reaction first. David Prutton, how special...
Seamless,
exactly. That's what we work on in this show. How special is it, though, David, for both Colchester and Oxford facing both Manchester clubs in the next round, in the quarterfinals?
It's fantastic. It's exactly what perhaps teams of this ilk look forward to. Yes, you've got to make sure that you carry on performing in the actual season. Do as well as you can. Obviously, Oxford doing extremely well. Colchester, perhaps with work to do if they're looking towards any form of promotion push. But these are exactly what they're going after. I mean, ominous signs, obviously, when you're going up against Manchester City. Manchester United, they're in a nice little role for them, which means that perhaps by the time that game comes around, they might be in a better place, both physically and mentally. But it's a nice iron, isn't it, for Colchester? They'll go into this one, obviously, having gone into the Spurs game as clear favourites. They'll go in as underdogs against Manchester United. So it'll be intriguing to see the way that they approach them. But, I mean, what it means to the players, all you need to do is look at how they reacted when the draw came out. The Colchester lads absolutely buzzing. John McGreal talking about what an occasion it's shaping up to be. And it's great that, I mean, we're getting deep into the competition. And yes, it's probably going to be one of the big boys that ends up at the very end lifting the trophy. But in the interim period, our team's going up against these huge corporations, if you like, is very much, as you say, Ben, the David and Goliath that we love about football.
It's great for the coffers as well, isn't it, Prutz? You know, for Colchester and for Oxford, I mean, the money that they're going to generate from these ties is just absolutely phenomenal. And that, from a club perspective, is very, very important, given what we've seen happening at sort of Bury and Bolton and clubs like that. So it's just a perfect draw for those two.
Yeah, Don, Liverpool's still in there as well, of course, facing a trip to Aston Villa in the next round. You've seen firsthand some of their youngsters shine in the competition so far this season. But will Jurgen Klopp be looking at what Manchester City did maybe in recent seasons and using it maybe as a springboard or a confidence boost mid-season, if you like, to winning the Premier League title as well?
I don't think they need a springboard or confidence, do you? They're the European champions. So if you don't take any sort of... you know, positivity from that and self-belief from that, then you never will, really. I think the biggest problem for Jurgen Klopp is where are they going to fit it into their fixture schedule? You're right, we're getting to the kind of latter stages of the tournament where the big boys tend to start just strengthening up the teams a little bit and playing one or two more first teamers. The Liverpool youngsters have done fantastically well. But I think the Liverpool youngsters, given the circumstances, will probably get their chance to continue against Aston Villa because of the incredible fixture congestion. So, you know, it is a trophy. It was a little overdue for Jurgen Klopp in terms of him reaching finals and ending up losing. So to win the Champions League, it in all likelihood, you can see it being the first of many, many trophies.
Yeah, good chance to shine for those youngsters maybe, though, in the next round as well, as you mentioned. Roger, also Everton v Leicester in there as well, where, like we said, we're at the quarter-final stage now. Is this a big chance for both these sides to maybe win a trophy this season? You obviously won the competition with Birmingham as well.
100%. Yeah, I mean, they got the better of the draw. If you look at the draw itself, a lot of Premier League teams still left in the competition. And them two sort of drew each other, so... It's a chance for both teams, but I'd say on form in the league, that Leicester will be very, very happy with that draw and look to get themselves into sort of a double two-legged tie in the semis. But like you say, I mean, both of them will look to win that. And it's on the night in that one. Just going back to the other two sides, getting the big clubs. That's great for the EFL, and then going up against them that calibre of side. But I certainly think Leicester will look to push through to the semi-final stage, if I'm honest.
Yeah, some tasty-looking ties there, certainly. Now let's move on to the games that we'll be covering in the preview now. David, you'll be in the Sky Sports presenter's chair tonight for Bristol City's trip to Barnsley. Looking at the home side, first of all, still without a permanent manager after Daniel Stendel left the club, bottom of the league, how crucial is it that they start getting wins now, sooner rather than later, to give whoever that new manager may be a chance of staying up?
Well, it's imperative, really, isn't it? It's such a tough position that they've found themselves in. I mean, the way the season started, it was the most false of false dawns, wasn't it? But being able to turn over Fulham on the opening day, then just a dreadful run since then, which has quite obviously cost Daniel Stendel his job. It's strange because parallels perhaps with how we saw, not necessarily how we saw Ipswich carry on last year, but the fact that they changed managers but got someone in fairly early, but didn't actually change the course of how the rest of the season went. And that's not me saying that whoever comes in now, they're on a sinking ship and they're going to be struggling. But I just think with how the league's gone so far, how competitive it's been at both ends, the magnitude and the size of the clubs that they're down there fighting against, that we all think at some stage, Borough will pull the fingers out. At some stage, Stoke need to pull the fingers out. Huddersfield, Reading, Luton, teams that we know that can fight tooth and nail at that end of the division. But for Barnsley, it was always going to be a promoted team. The first port of call, obviously, we're going to come on to Charlton, who have made great strides as a promoted side. But for Barnsley, it was about being able to consolidate as soon as possible. Then anything after that, I always felt was going to be a bonus. And it was just a strange position that they found themselves in. The fact that Stendel got the sack and then was having a party with the supporters in the aftermath of being sacked kind of showed that they were not necessarily ecstatic with what he's done, but very, very appreciative of how he'd managed to get them back at the first attempt, the type of football that they'd seen, albeit it wasn't generating the points that they perhaps felt that they deserved, shows that the tricky situation that they're in. And now with Adebayo as caretaker manager, with it's only two defeats in the last five, but still it's wins that they're going to need at this moment in time very soon as we head racing towards Christmas and how busy we know that is, just to give them a fighting chance of staying up. So when they are treading water, when they are in the interim period between appointing a manager after Daniel's gone, it's so important that they do pick up points. But if they do, then that becomes Adam's job to lose. If they don't, they've got to get someone in quickly.
Yeah, Don, as David mentions, wins haven't come, but some improved performances from Adam Murray's team in his time in caretaker charge. They got a point at the Hawthorns after they led 2-0. Is it fair to say he could be, maybe throw his hat into the ring for the job, do you think?
Well, yeah, I think he's got a taste for it now. Just going back to the Stendel sacking, I think it's an absolute shocker, really. And I think the fact that Prutz alluded to there, that Daniel Stendel had a party with the fans, tells you everything you need to know. I don't really know what Barnsley, what the hierarchy were expecting. He'd created one of the best teams in League One, and then get promoted to the Championship and then dissemble the team, lose Kiefer Moore, Liam Lindsay, Adam Davis, Pinnock and more. So that the spine and the heart of the team was ripped apart. So I don't really know what Barnsley were expecting other than what they're getting here this season, And then to do that, I look at that and then I say, is it an attractive job? What real ambitious manager? He's going to look at how Stendel was treated. And for me, it takes away a little bit of the attraction, really. So they've got to be careful, Barnsley. They've got to start sort of thinking a bit harder about ramifications of sacking managers that have got them to where they are. But getting on to performances.
Don, just to ask you a question about that. Does that just show the kind of rank short-terminism about what that club wanted? Like you say, well done, you got us promoted. Yeah. We're gonna sell the main crux of the best back four in the division. Yeah. And so good luck with the rest of this, with what you do next after that. I mean, that's no foundation. That's not forward planning, is
no.
it?
No, it's not really. And they've missed a trick because I think had they kept those players that we've mentioned, I honestly don't believe that they'd be down where they are. And you look at the statistics, they've conceded 27 goals in the first 14 games, nearly two goals a game, which means that you've got to score three to win a game of football. It's just not, you can't do it. So, I seem to remember Barnsley doing a similar thing with Keith Hill.
Yeah,
very, very similar where they sacked him. And I really don't know what they were expecting other than a sort of a fight against relegation, really. And, look, they've made the decision. They've made the bed. They've got a lie in it. Now it's about encouraging the caretaker manager, encouraging the players to put on the performances. And actually, you know what? If you look at the games that they've played this season, they've in most of them, they've been relatively competitive. You know, they just are struggling defensively, which isn't a surprise given what we've said. And they're struggling to stick the ball in the net at the other end of the field. So, you know, it is a problem for them and it's a recipe for disaster. But it's sooner rather than later, they are going to need results. I think you're right, Prutz, to compare them to the Ipswich scenario of last season. And it's very, very hard looking at Barnsley and how they're going now to see whether they've got enough to actually survive at this level.
Yeah, Roger, though, coming back to Adam Murray, though, what was it like when you're in that situation as a player, when there isn't a permanent manager in place, it's a caretaker? Does it feel like you're sort of in limbo, maybe?
It does. It does, definitely. Don, I know you follow the Wolves avidly, and it was a tough period that Championship season when it was swapping managers around. There were managers, Terry was still around the place, and you had Stoller come in, then Dean Saunders, and you just never knew whether you were coming or going. So it is tough. It is in the back of your mind. Football players need to be settled and like to be settled. So when the board are chopping and changing, and if you go on a bad run of games, I mean, just touching on Barnsley, I mean, I don't think, I know they are where they are in the league, they're rock bottom, but their last run of games, they've played Derby, they played Preston, Swansea, West Brom, Huddersfield, and they've managed to get a couple of draws out of that.
They should have won some of them games, Roger, as well.
I know. So, I mean, they're not. Murray's gone in there, and yeah, it's a tough, tough task ahead of him. But like I say, and Don says there, they've actually should have won some of them games. They managed to draw three of them. Obviously took a bit of a hiding against Preston, but Preston are up there on merit and second in the table themselves. But it is a tough period, and certainly the Championship is such a hard league, as we all know. So coming up against another top six side in Bristol City and how they're doing of late. It's a tough ask. But back to the original question, it's the chopping and changing. Based on history, it's not a great thing to keep doing as a board and as a club. I thought the sacking, like Don said, and Prats have said, it's a crazy decision considering where they came from and the players they had.
It also doesn't seem as if they had a plan of action in place about who they were going to recruit next. Really, it was like, right, let's sack him. Right, what are we going to do now? And it just hasn't. You know, you would have thought that by now that they would have identified and secured the manager that they see to lead them out of the trouble. But
you'd think so. I mean, at the time, if you remember at the Wolves one, obviously that's my sort of main situation I can compare to it. I think there were managers turning up left, right and centre that they didn't have anybody set in stone. And then you end up taking sort of a third and fourth and fifth choice down the list. I mean, I think Steve Bruce even came in that period. When we were in the Championship at Wolves and that didn't pan out. And I think that was their number one. So obviously then you go down the list and it becomes tough in the end. It becomes very tough.
Ironically though, David, of course, Bristol City will be without their manager this weekend as well, you know, former Barnsley boss Lee Johnson on the touchline, serving that touchline ban. Could that be difficult for them as well going into this game?
Having seen the hands-on approach that Lee likes to take, I mean, he's so very thorough that there'll be no stone left unturned in the run-up to the actual game. So, I think any time that you see this happen, you always know that in the course of the week, they'd have covered everything to the far end of whatever they need to work it out till. There'll be dialogue given before the game that makes sure that everything is taken care of. They're in a good vein of form since the start of the season, Bristol City. And I think what Lee's managed to get out of his team, which is something we'll probably come on to, is the fact that this whole streaky nickname that he got, he's managed to turn those little runs where they may have had a couple of defeats on the bounce into maybe a draw and a win, a couple of draws, and kept them bubbling along nicely, which is real testament to the character that he's shown. But going back to him being on the touchline, I've been in a position where when things have been going okay, but the manager's getting on your nerves a little bit. Sometimes not having him on the touchline, all the lads are like, we can calm down a little bit now. You know what I mean? We're not having to embark and instructions at us all the way through the game. But Lee is very hands-on. He's very vocal. He's not one to sit down, is he? He's one to kind of prowl the technical area. So I can't see it being too much of a problem, only because of how thorough and how much he would have put it. In my opinion, I think he would have probably doubled his efforts over the course of the week to make sure that there is no stone left unturned. So the players can't turn around and, at the end and say, look, well, Gaffey, it'd been nice if you'd been on the touchline, but unfortunately you weren't there, so they've got nothing to blame that on.
Yeah, Don, as David rightly mentions there, we've previously seen and been used to Lee Johnson's teams going on long winning and losing streaks, getting that nickname Streaky Sort of Lee. It is in previous seasons. This season so far, that hasn't really been the case. Does that show that they may be maturing as a side now and that they can really challenge for promotion?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't... I look at them as a club, and we've just spoke about Barnsley and the players that they lost. And also, you look at Bristol City. They had a very, very long-term plan in place. So they lost key players in Adam Webster, in Liam Kelly, in Marlon Pack. But they lost key players, and they were able to replace them and support the manager and understand his needs. And the recruitment was very, very good. So like Prutz has alluded to, they've turned into a team that now knows how to be difficult to beat. Just one defeat in the last sort of 13 is evidence of that. And I look at this league now, and I see it as being wide open, probably more wide open this league than ever before. And therefore, I can see sort of three or four of the top six come the end of the season being what we would categorise as surprises, really. And Bristol City certainly fall into that category.
Yeah, Roger, though, simply put, if you were going to be a promotion contender in the Championship, do you think you have to win games like Barnsley away, considering the situation that Bristol City find themselves in?
I do, totally. I mean, it said in the last comment there, the Championship is the Championship. It's, if not one of the toughest in the world. He'll be going out, although he's not on the down on the pitch side. Like Pratt said, it's actually quite refreshing not to have them there sometimes. So they'll be looking to go and win this. I mean, anything but a win will be a disappointing result given the position of Barnsley in the league. But you can't take them for granted. These sort of games are sometimes harder than playing somebody who's a place above you or a place below you. They're struggling for their lives down at the bottom, so they need a win. It doesn't look like they've downed tools for the manager, because as I said earlier, that the results they've been picking up, and as Don said, they should have won a few of them games. That it won't be an easy game, but if you're looking to answer the question, if you're looking to stay in that top six and push for promotion, certainly going into the Christmas period, these are the sort of games you have to win.
Yeah, well, 8 out of the last 9 goals Barnsley have conceded have been in the second half, so a lot of points lost late on for the home side. Let's move on now to Sunday's clash between two of the season's surprise packages at the Valley, Charlton taking on Preston. David, how impressed have you been with what Lee Bowyer has achieved so far this season? Many people's favourites for relegation, of course.
Well, they weren't, and as I said, when a team comes up, that's the instant bracket that you put these sides in. That's just the kind of very nature of how we view how competitive the league is. But they've been a shining example of how to attack the next division fearlessly, but with real due diligence to how you want to go about playing your game. Obviously, the big question, or the big kind of exciting point for us watching on, was how Lyle Taylor was going to step up to the mark. And I'm sure Charlton were thinking exactly the same thing. But then after, when he's out of action now, that the next question was, it's not just a team about Lyle Taylor. And the rest of the players, this is me not selling them short before Taylor was injured, but what they've done over the course of that, dealing with that, and then moving on from that, has been fantastic. They've got some real, really creative players, like of the likes of Osthuma, Bon, that people and players that know creatively how to win a football match. But also, if you're looking at the likes of Prattley, Gallagher, Cullen, Solly, lads that know what this division is about, what English football is about, and what it takes to be competitive. And the way that Lee's led them, I think, is fantastic. I mean, if I'd hate to see him really laid back, because I don't think he'd get up off the floor, because it is that kind of the way he approaches a football match and the way he approaches his job. When I say matter of factly, I mean that in the nicest possible sense. He understands that football matches are tough, but if you do your utmost during the course of the week leading up to them, listen to what the manager wants, and with that little bit of luck, you're going to have an half decent season, which is what they're doing at this moment in time. And the teams that you look at that they've beaten show a real quality and a real character to the side. And that, yes, I mean, as I said, a team that comes up, you've got to look to get safe as soon as possible. I'm sure that's what Lee Bowyer outwardly is trying to say, but inwardly, when he's seen enough of the division that he's seen so far, given how tight it is from the very top down to halfway, I don't think that they can't be too naive to think that they can discount themselves out of being in the shaker when it comes to, say, March, April time. And I think it's a real reflection of what he's managed to do, because the perennial debate with that was what on earth's going on upstairs. We barely talk about that now. We barely talk about what he has to deal with up above, because he's managed to settle them down because of what the team's doing on the pitch. And it's all credit to a man who's a novice in the job, obviously, of being the top kind of manager. But he knows Charlton well, and he seems to fit them really well at this moment in time.
Just touching on that, Pratt. I mean, Johnny Jackson has got to take a bit of credit as well. I mean, he's rose to the challenge massively. Like you say, Bowes is very, very laid back, overly laid back. So I think the two of them have gelled well. Jacko was probably a little bit disappointed not to be given the job. I think the promotion kind of killed that, to chuck him in at the deep end of getting... being this first sort of role as a championship manager. But I speak to a lot of the boys still, and Jacko has a lot to do with that. So fair play to the two of them. They've both gone in, both hardly experienced. I know they got themselves promoted in League One, but the championship is a different kettle of fish, and they both rose to the challenge massively.
Yeah, Don, you've talked glowingly about Charlton as well before on the podcast. They've had a tough run of games recently. Would a win against Preston prove that they are, that they may be the real deal and could make a challenge for those playoff spots?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's one step at a time. I don't for a second believe that before a ball was kicked, Charlton's ambition was a playoff spot. Honestly, I don't. You know, I would think consolidation. I mean, again, remind ourselves, this is a team that came out of League One along with Barnsley, who we've talked about their struggles. And many people probably would have expected him to struggle. I didn't, because I saw in Lee Bowyer and Johnny Jackson, that combination, how adaptable they were last season, how they picked, you know, you got to remember they lost the playoff semi-final the season before. That in itself, to pick a team up and get them promoted the following season is a wonderful, wonderful feat and a wonderful achievement for those guys. But they showed adaptability, and that's my point here. Even within the games, changing systems, changing formations, shuffling players around. And I thought, you know what? Charlton are going to give some championship teams some problems. I mean, look, the start was tremendous. They epitomised the championship in many ways. They've probably beaten teams like Leeds that you wouldn't have expected them to be, and maybe lost one or two games where you might have expected them to win. And that epitomises the championship. But look, if the aim for Charlton is a top 10, if they can target a sort of a top half, top 10 finish, that then with 10 games to go, you know, they may find themselves, if they're in the top half of this table, really not a million miles away from a playoff spot. And at that point, they can just, you know, have a real go. Like I said in reference to the previous game, Bristol City, I just think that there are three or four teams that are going to unexpectedly be in the top six this season, and Charlton certainly have the potential to be one of those.
Yeah, Roger, one of your former teams as well, of course. We've seen a few young talents on loan from Premier League clubs in Josh Cullen and Conor Gallagher, who've both really stepped up this season. Cullen scoring a penalty in the 94th minute at West Brom to earn them a point. How exciting is that to see those young players getting a chance to play full men's professional football?
I'm an avid Chelsea fan, and I like it at the moment. It's going well there, and the youth are getting a go, and they're stepping up to the challenge. So these guys aren't getting a game at their parent club, and the Championship is as tough. It's a horrendous league to play in, a great league, but it's a tough league to play in. So them coming down and actually producing is good for them personally. It's good for Charlton, and it's obviously good for the parent club they're on loan from. So because they're getting that experience of where the manager of where they're from can see that they can actually step up and play in a tough league like the Championship. So to see
Roger, would you agree that if Mason Mount and Tomori and those lads, Tammy Abraham, if they hadn't have had that experience last season at their respective loan clubs, I don't think they'd be in that Chelsea team this season.
Do you know what, it's
invaluable experience. And when you look at Harry Kane, look at what going out on loan did for him. So I think some of those lads that you've mentioned, Cullen and Gallagher, it's wonderful for them, and they look at home at that level, and it can only really stand them in good stead, I would think.
Definitely. I mean, like I keep saying, the Championship is so tough. So yeah, go into a League One and a League Two side, yeah, it's good experience, but they're actually stepping into a league which is a great league. So to be producing how they are, for me, is great. And like you just said there, that to the lads at Chelsea to step out and get that experience, they're ready to go back in. And Lampard's done great with Mount, obviously taking him to he was at Derby, and then he's bringing him back, and he's been unbelievable this season. So just to the young lads that are doing it, I mean, let's not forget Charlton are that they bring through a lot of young kids anyway, and have done for years and years. And that's credit to Jason Yule. I mean, they always seem to get somebody through. I mean, of recent years, obviously, they've had Adi Lukman. They've had Ezri Konsu, who's now playing in the Premier League. Carlon Grant was in the Premier League last year. And he's
Jaribo, wasn't he, as well?
Jaribo, gone to Rangers, doing well, playing. They always do it, and I say it again, that is credit to Yuli and the setup there. It's brilliant for bringing kids through, and they've always done it. But back to the original one, yeah, the lads that have come in from the clubs, they're not getting a game at, for me, they've helped Charlton, and then the league position doesn't lie, I'm afraid.
Yeah, good setup to be involved in there at the Valley. Switching the focus to the visitors now, though, David, you can see there is a lot of spirit in this Preston side as well from last week's comeback win against, you know, the Lancashire rivals in Blackburn, coming from two goals down to win 3-2. How crucial is it that they are, you know, if they're going to maintain a promotion push, that they have that in their locker? We saw from Norwich last season, they had it in their locker, and, you know, they, you know, never seemed to know when they were going to be beaten.
Well, it's really important. I mean, we talk about Preston, we talk about, without actually using the terminology of little old Preston, but we kind of tend to see them at the top of the division and think, surely they can't last the pace. But I think what Alex Neil's managed to put together is a team that has been operating under the radar for the last couple of seasons. But maybe, just maybe, it's a team that is quite obviously greater than some of its parts that can do something pretty special this season. I think when you've seen them, as you say, they showed great character in the Blackburn game, but they're not, I mean, holding leads as well the week before. There is a real solidity to this team. There is a real, I like the way that they go about playing football matches, go about the Championship. Alex Neil knows how to get a team out of this. And I know he's not gone to Preston and just thought, let's just kind of fudge it on and see where we end up at the end of the season. You can't be in a division, as Don said, that's so wide open as this one and so close and not think, hang on, if we manage to have a good run with injuries, have a good run with our form and fitness and consistency, and not think that without a kind of standalone runaway leader, that you shouldn't be downing yourself out of the conversation with regard to getting in at least the top six. I think, obviously, the Charlton game coming up is a tough one. Huddersfield Derby and Hull following that one. I think the real core of what the team is built and put together is a team of players that knows the division. I don't think there's any real substitute for that. Yes, it'd be nice to have a couple of superstars in, but again, his emphasis is very much on the team ethic. And then someone like Daniel Johnson, who has been one of the most consistent kind of performers alongside someone like Ben Pearson, who we know is feisty, loves a booking, but that mixture of you've got the silk with the steel there means that we shouldn't dismiss them when it comes to looking at sides that should possibly, in the division that is as flat as we've seen, again, going back to what Don said, shouldn't count themselves out of the conversation at all.
Yeah, Don, as expected, though, Alex Neil saying that he's demanding a better start from his team this weekend, though, despite that, you know, coming back from 2-0 down against Blackburn. How crucial will that be against what seems to be a very hard-to-beat Charlton team?
Well, it's always... statistics will highlight that most of the time when a team scores the first goal, they will go on and win a game. Now, you get exceptions to the rule, and usually those exceptions are the teams that have got lots and lots of goals in them, you know, and that's why Norwich were able to concede last season and end up winning 4-3, and that's why West Bromwich Albion this season, goodness knows how many times they've conceded first, but they're some of the top scorers. Preston, the top scorers in this league, you know, so when you do concede, you've always got a chance, because you know you're going to create chances, and you know that you've got people in form that are going to stick those chances away. So for some teams, it's more important that they score first than for others. But it is a bad habit. I alluded to that when I covered West Bromwich Albion recently, and it's not really one that you want to be repeating over and over and over again. But what last week will have done in a Lancashire derby to be 2-0 down, they will now never, ever, ever believe that the game is over until that final whistle. Mm. You know, that will inspire them, even when they go 1-0, 2-0 down, to keep going. That will be fresh. And I tell you what, that is a massive, massive positive for Preston. And the other thing about Alex Neil is, you know, if you're going to believe the rumours, he actually had an opportunity to go to West Bromwich Albion. There has to be a reason that that Alex Neil would remain at Preston and not go to West Bromwich Albion, which, with respect, in modern history, is a bigger club than Preston. And I do say that with the greatest of respect, because I know Preston has a wonderful history. But he did that for a reason, because he had the belief. I think he was backed by the board. I thought the recruitment of Bayliss and Patrick Bauer, David Nugent, shrewd, you know, mixture of youth and experience. I think that secretly Preston have come into this season actually quite fancy in a top six finish.
One of the players that Don mentioned there, Patrick Bauer, one of your former teammates, Roger, now at Preston, of course. Will he have, you know, to be wary of Lee Boy? You're targeting his weaknesses maybe going into this. Obviously, he'll know him inside out from last season.
That's the thing. They'll know Pat's strengths and weaknesses. Pat was there a long time. I think he signed in 2015, so that they'll know him inside out. Certainly Johnny Jackson, because he was there the whole time, playing alongside him, managing him, under being assistant. So, yeah, I mean, I think Pat will be naive to not think that they will, because they seem to be very thorough from what I've heard from the boys and talking to Jacko. They're very thorough in what they do. So if they can pick on a weakness of Pat's, I'm not going to hang Pat out on here to say what I think his weaknesses are, but I'm sure...
really point them out.
Yeah, I'm sure Jacko and Bose will certainly look to address a couple of them. There might be a couple. There might be more, but you never know.
Roger refusing to give us the exclusive there on the
Absolutely.
Podcast.
Absolutely.
Well, surprisingly enough, only Huddersfield have had fewer shots on goal than Charlton this season. So Lee Boyer's men certainly making the most of their chances in front of goal. Now moving on to, as we mentioned, West Brom a few times in the podcast already, it only seems fair to look at their match on Monday night, David. Usually it's...
The Tony Pulis derby, yeah.
The Tony Pulis derby. We've got another derby coming up, the Don Goodman derby, later on in the podcast. But
That could be anything.
There's a lot of clubs to choose from. Usually it's unfair to expect a team in the relegation zone, as Stoke currently are, to take anything from a match against the league leaders. But for Nathan Jones' sake, do they simply have to get a result from this game?
Well, I mean, how long have we been saying that? That's been the case for such a long period of time. I mean, you'd probably even go as far back into the back end of last season, because there's no doubt that man has put his heart and his soul into what he believes to be the right way of getting that team whipped into shape. But the games that we've seen, some of the errors have just been mind-boggling. Take the Sheffield Wednesday game, for example. The goal that they actually end up scoring And it's not. I mean, is it? If you, I'm not talking about the untrained eye, but if you're looking at it, would you think it's glaringly obvious? I think you would, because you look at a ball that goes downfield. We all like defenders, and Roger will allude to this. It's nice when defenders make it look all sexy, get the ball down, little Cruyff, pass it to the fullback. It's even better when they leather it over the stand and someone hasn't got a run, yeah, a free run
at
goal.
I'm more the latter one of that.
Well, and I heavily relied on you to cover my backside doing that, which is what I'd really appreciate. But that sense of setting a team up, knowing what he wants for them, asking tactical questions of them over the course of the week, knowing that he's done as much as he possibly can going into the game, then watching things like that staggers me. In a team that, as we've said, I mean, and this, me and Don have had this chat over the course of several games and different places of when it comes to teams that are struggling, obviously the finger gets pointed at the manager. But I think this is one of those very genuine and not very often cases where you look at it and go, mistakes are absolutely killing him. Mistakes that he would not assume would be made by players of that experience, of that calibre. Saying, it's like I said, it's very nice if you can play the beautiful game. It's better if you're hard to beat and you're grinding out results. And I think Stoke fans, or the majority of the Stoke fans I've heard from, have been on the manager's side, because of the approach, and they can see what he's trying to do. But for some reason, it's two steps forward and four back. I mean, you get good back-to-back results, Swansea, Fulham. Then you lose at Wednesday. Then you go up against your former manager and go around and you lose against them. Yes, it's a tough place to go, but you go into a game against West Brom, who have been free scoring, have shown resilience to come back from going goals down to get back into games. And they're basically, West Brom are the antithesis of what Stoke are. They're hard to beat. They're resilient. They've got character. They've got depth. They've got creativity, which is, I mean, all of those things are what Stoke are crying out for. And I just, like I said, whether we're still having this conversation in a month's time, 2 months' time after Christmas, I really don't know, because I think in situations such as this, where managers have done their utmost and things haven't come off, then there has been a change. But from the point of view of the Stoke setup, and Tony Pulis was talking to us about this the other day, saying they're not just going to hire and fire people, because that's not the way they go. And there's credit to them for that. But also, it just goes to show that a manager is very much at the mercy of the players, understandably, that he's brought in, and he needs to know that whoever he's brought in has been rightly vetted and is going to play the way he wants to play. And if not, it falls at the manager's feet then, unfortunately.
Don, as David mentions, back-to-back defeats, of course, for Stoke after those miraculous back-to-back wins. Again, it's been a tough run of games for them, but how important is it that they don't get consumed again by that negativity around the club, of course, due to the results which we've already seen earlier in the season?
Well, it's very difficult not to get consumed by negativity when, you know, you're a team that pre-season were one of the favourites to be promoted, and you find yourself 4 points from safety with nearly a third of the season gone. So it is hard to avoid that negativity. As a professional footballer, you've got to try and rise above it. You're looking for positives. The positives for me, from a Stoke perspective, is that in the last game, they got their first home win, so they got to focus on that. They're at home on Monday night. They beat Fulham. Fulham are one of the three teams, I think, along with West Brom and Leeds, that are the benchmark, and they set the standard if you want to be up the top end of this division. So they did that. And the third thing is, I look at the sort of expected goals sort of league table. And whilst it's not an exact science, I've found over the years, it's not a million miles away, you know, where teams that are getting results more by luck than judgment or whatever. Stoke should be comfortably mid-table. But as Prutz has alluded to, some of these blunders and mistakes are just, they're absolutely killing them in terms of getting the results that perhaps some of the performances have deserved. So getting back to your point, it's a huge, huge game. You know, you thought that victories over Swansea and Fulham back-to-back would be a catalyst. And then, of course, they go and lose against Sheffield Wednesday and Millwall in the last couple of games. And that just puts you on the back foot. And that negativity that you spoke about in the question, it's natural. You can understand it from a supporter's perspective, finding a club like Stoke in the precarious position that they are.
You've experienced the hangover of relegation, Roger, from the Premier League before. What can it be like in a changing room like that? And is there any way of getting out of it?
He's a tough one. As the boys have said there, the squad that they have, the calibre of manager that they've got, obviously he's did so well in his previous job. It is hard to put your finger on, but as you see over the years that we talk about football, and it happens. Can I put my finger on it? No. Are the players buying into how he wants to play? Because he seems very regimented in this diamond that he wants to play. And could tell me if I'm wrong. I don't believe that there's a backup plan. If it's not working, I've been dying for him to change something. But for me, he's been playing players out of position in just so he can force that diamond formation, and it isn't working. The league doesn't lie, but certainly with the players they've got there, and like you said at the start of the question, at Wolves, there's no way we should have gone down with the squad that we had, but we did for one reason or another. I'm not going to get into the talk of that, but some players aren't buying in, some players don't want to be there, some players think they should be back in the Premier League, and I do sometimes feel bad for the manager. I wish he would sort of try something a little different, stay harder to beat. I mean, they've conceded the second most amount of goals in the league, barring Barnsley. So that would be my first port of call. I would be hard to beat, like Pratt said, be hard to beat. And then as the game goes on and the late you get in the game, they've got players that can score goals, but they seem to be, yes, you can't legislate for the mistakes.
It isn't just that either, is it really? When you look at them, I spoke about first goals being important and Preston top scorers in the league. Yeah. They can concede first and they know that they'll create chances to come back and either draw or win games of football. You look at Stoke, scored 13 goals. If they concede first, they're losing a game of football. Yeah. So, you know, we're alluding to these mistakes, but there are problems at the other end of the pitch in terms of their creativity or their effectiveness in front of goal.
I agree with that, but you are going to get chances, certainly with the players they have got. Yeah, they're lacking creation and actually scoring, but they've got the players that can do it. So I think if they stay in the games a bit longer, And try and cut the errors out. Obviously, like I said, you can't legislate for the mistakes, and that is killing the side, the club, and the manager at the moment.
Well, let's focus on the flip side of it now, though. West Brom, top of the table. Slaven Bilic, David, how surprised have you been with how he's taken to the Championship? Seems to be like a duck to water so far.
Well, yeah, I think it's been great. The kind of personality, character and effervescence that he brings to the role means that as bystanders, as spectators, we've thoroughly enjoyed it. Me and Don had a very lively chat with him post-match at Huddersfield with him windmilling with a microphone, which made for both intriguing listening and intriguing viewing, I think. But it just goes, I mean, the real energy of the fella is infectious. We spoke to him on the opening day of the season when they played Nottingham Forest. And yes, it was basically Slaven, it's your first taste of the Championship, either as a player or a manager. And he very much on board, shrugged his shoulders, said, love the division, love the league, love the challenges, love the fact that you're playing games very, very quickly and there's lots coming up thick and fast. And perhaps there's a confidence and there's an assurance that comes with that he's got the players on board that he wanted to be able to give it the best crack that he could possibly do. But I think you've also got to look at the, like I said, the personality of the manager, who seems to lead his side with that death-like stare at times, but also is quick to smile, isn't he? Quick to get the players on side with how he works them, how he treats them, how he puts them and sets them up in games, which, as I said, as a neutral, we really enjoy, because yes, they might give away a goal, but he backs them to score more goals than the opposition. Football, very much in a nutshell, which is what the approaches that you need. And I think he was asked the other week about, is it a worry? I think it might have even been Don that asked him about, is it a worry that you let goals in? And he said, it'd be nice if we didn't, but as long as we end up winning the game. It was a kind of a shrug of the shoulders, which I really admired, and thought, well, it's nice if you win 1-0 and bore your way to the title. It's better for us as a spectacle to watch a team having to duke it out. You talk about what we saw from the Barnsley game as well. They were in a game for a long period of time, but they managed to get something out of it. Again, that resilience that goes to show that if we're not winning today, we're certainly not going to lose. And the firepower that they've got, the personnel that he's brought in, someone, Sawyers is the one that stands out for me, just makes him tick metronomically in the middle of the park. Just what he gets out of the football and what he gets out of his side is a pleasure to watch. And I think almost that novelty factor of this level of football for him is really kind of coming out in the way he talks about it. I'm not saying he's condescending about it at all. I'm just saying for him, we see managers that are sometimes a little bit battle-weary when it comes to the assault of what a championship season is. For him, he seems to be thoroughly enjoying every single minute.
Yeah, and Don, as we've mentioned there, they seem to score a lot of goals. And as you've mentioned before on the show and today as well, they've scored a lot from losing positions. Is it important for them that they also find a consistent goal scorer in the team now as well? Looking at, you know, the goals that have been scored so far, we've seen that they've been shared around the team, but we've seen with the likes of, obviously, the signing of Charlie Austin, he hasn't really hit his full goal-scoring potential so far, of course.
No, I mean, look, the bottom line is they're scoring goals. They're scoring a lot of goals. So it doesn't really matter whether it's your mate striker or, you know, the other lads in behind. I think Matt Phillips has got 5, Dean Garner's got 4, Pereira's got 3. They've got 3 other players that have got a couple. They've got 13 players in that squad that have scored in the Championship this season. So, unlike last season, where there was a heavy reliance on Galen Rodriguez, who scored 40-odd between them, they don't have to rely on that that striker that's going to get you 20, 25 goals this season. I mean, Charlie Austin was a calculated risk, what with his age, what with his recent injury past, but it was definitely one that was worth taking, and it's one that it may still come to fruition. I do still think it's the other end of the pitch that they really need to sort of try and tidy up. Just 2 clean sheets all season. And I did ask Clavin the question, and he did shrug it off. And I think he shrugged it off because he probably expected they would slowly but surely over the course of the season start tightening things up, you know. But when you're a team like West Bromwich Albion, I think for me it's more about performance levels. And I throw Leeds and I throw Fulham into that. With the players, with certainly the attacking talent that they've got, if performance levels are good week in, week out, those teams are going to be up the top of this league.
Yeah, Roger, as Don's touched on there in terms of the defensive performances. I know it's hard to criticise a team who are top of the league, but could they improve defensively, do you think, in terms of how the season pans out, and how important could that be for them if they're going to challenge for promotion?
It's tough for me as a defender because I adore clean sheets. So if we won 4-3 we've won, but we've conceded 3. So as a defender, that's tough pill to swallow. So yes, they're top of the league, but they've conceded, I think, the most. Yeah, I mean, I think they're second most conceded in the top 6 at the moment. I think Bristol City are the only ones with more. But you've got to work from a base. That's always how I've played football and been brought up through managers. It's very rare. He's a bit of a character, as Pratt's mentioned, and it was refreshing to see. But will that come and haunt them in games where perhaps they're missing chances and they are conceding goals, and it happens where, yes, you're creating chances and you just don't take them? So, yeah, it's a crazy method to have.
But you look, Roger, you look, don't you? They're top of the league by 2 points. If that defence had been anything like it needs to be, they probably could have a 5, 6, 7-point cushion by now.
And that may be the most important thing come the end of the season. So, yeah, it's good at the moment. And yes, he shrugged it off. But for me, as a defensive-minded player, to work from a solid base and with the power they've got up front, with the goals they can score, if they can just tighten up at the back, for me, yeah, I mean, they're favourites for me.
Well, just 6 goals in open play for Stoke this season so far, so maybe a chance for West Brom to keep a clean sheet in this one. Now let's move on to our featured game in Sky Bet League One, David. Blackpool taking on high-flying Peterborough. Mm-hmm. Blackpool have dropped off a little bit after a good start to the season, but in Simon Grayson, do they have the right man in place to deliver a promotion push? He's done it so many times before in this division, of course.
Well, it's a very strong CV, isn't it, for him to get a job in that division and above. I think that, well, that's when they see what the history is with Simon at Blackpool and what he's managed to do before, I think that's very much in the thinking. He's a manager who likes things very straightforward, very low-key. He likes things that are done in a certain way, which gives him as few headaches as possible over the course of a week leading up to a game. We saw them play up against, I think it was Bolton, wasn't it, a few Mondays ago. And that was a game where chances perhaps were few and far between. They looked to be pretty decent on the counter-attack. That element of being able to attack the opposition with pace after soaking up a bit of pressure is something that Simon's always liked to do. I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that he's a guaranteed League One cheat code, that the minute you get him in, that you are head first and destined for promotion. But I think knowing the division, having seen the division and knowing Simon's knowledge of the division means that when it comes to who could possibly be the best man in charge to take that club forward, then I think Simon's a good go-to guy. Plus, again, it's another club that has had focus away from the pitch. It's had focus on things that aren't remotely football related. And getting someone back in that really did set them on that trajectory towards the Premier League, I think, I'm not saying it's just a PR coup for the powers that be, but I think it knits together pretty well. And it seems to me that the fans are a bit more engaged with what's going on the pitch rather than making a song and dance about what's not going on off the pitch.
Yeah, Don, it's hard, looking at Peterborough now, it's hard to ignore their form at the minute, of course. Six games unbeaten and scoring for fun, it seems. Is this finally their year, do you think, to get promotion to the Championship?
I think it's arguably as good a chance as they'll get. You know, I really do. And I say that because last season, I felt that the top five as a collective at that level, and I obviously Barnsley and Charlton, two of the teams we spoke about in this podcast, were in that. I thought collectively the top five were fantastic and super strong as I've seen as a top five. So you've seen other teams at that level, you know, brilliant teams, but maybe the top one or the top two. But you haven't seen a five as strong as that. And I look at this league this season and you kind of, we probably all expected Ipswich and Sunderland to be, you know, set the standards and be up there. I mean, you never in a million years would you have thought it'd be Ipswich and Wickham, you know, flying the flag.
Great
there.
Great job that Gaz is doing, isn't it?
Unbelievable job. And you keep waiting week in, week out for them just to start faltering a little bit. They keep going. It's a remarkable effort. Sunderland are the disappointments. And I think for me, that gives a real opportunity for the others. So Peterborough, any club of that ilk, Blackpool, you know, there's a genuine chance for a team to get promoted up to the Championship. But you look at Peterborough and you think 36 goals. I mean, that is unbelievable, really. And you look at the where the goals are coming from. Ivan Toney is flourishing. Mo Issa, Marcus Madison is scoring unbelievable goals. So Darren Ferguson's got them playing super attacking football. They're 2 points off the top. I definitely would not back against them.
We touched on the goals there and those attacking players, Mo Issa, Ivan Toney, Marcus Madison. Is there a better attacking trio in the division and should they maybe be playing at a higher level than League One?
Certainly not. They're on fire, the three of them. Issa with 11, Toney 11 and Madison 8. I mean, and they're chipping in with the
assists. That's ridiculous numbers, isn't it, at this time of the league?
It's unbelievable. But for me, based on that, I mean, looking where they've been before, the three of them, they're doing well. They're producing now. So there's no need to think elsewhere and above your station. That will come if you put it in on the Saturdays and get these sort of stats that the three of them have got. The move will take care of itself. They just need to concentrate on what they're doing. They're sat lovely in the league in third. They're playing well. As Don said, the manager's got them playing and getting the best out of them. So for me, crack on, keep doing that, keep doing the right things, keep doing what you're doing with these. I mean, these stats are, like Price just said, unbelievable for this stage of the season. So no, for me, stay put, get your head down, and good things come.
Yeah, certainly a force to be reckoned with those three players. And now moving on to our featured game in Sky Bet League 2, a clash at the top, David, Bradford against Exeter. How big a game is this for both sides? So early on in the season, of course, both aiming for that promotion, of course.
There indeed, and I think perhaps if you look at Bradford maybe having a weekend off in preparation meant that they've managed to get the walking wounded back up and on the feet. Gary Bowyer, I think, again, I mean, it's sometimes hard to talk about EFL clubs without going, he's doing a good job, but also he's had to deal with what goes on above, which is another problem that's been at Bradford City. And I'm sure one that Dom perhaps can touch on in the sense of how hard a job it is for a manager just to get the players on the pitch when, in fact, he's been spinning plates left, right and centre over the course of the last couple of seasons. But where they find themselves now up against an Exeter side who, you look at perhaps the Cambridge and Scunny results, then how they performed against a very, very much fancy Plymouth, I think goes to show that they need to be seen as proper contenders. We've seen them flirt between these two divisions. We've seen them do ever so well to get established, which you even felt when they were up there, that was them. And Paul Tisdale was a man who always kind of alluded to it, was they were always punching above the weight, weren't they? So I think for them to be able to consistently keep at the kind of upper reaches of League Two with regard to the playing personnel, the turnover in playing personnel, the fact that they had such a long time of it being such a certain way with Tisdale in charge, and that club really built in the mould that reflected the manager, showed that at some stage they had to move on when he, in fact, did move on himself, and they had to look for something different. And I think it's credit to them for the way they've done it, credit to Bradford for being up in that sixth spot going into the game. I think the intriguing thing with this is what I've always found, and whenever you speak to, say, players that play at the very extremity of what this country has to offer, then the vast distances that are involved, I think they always play a part. This is not me preempting an excuse for either side with regard to how the game might turn out. But when we're talking about football at this level, I mean, I can't think for one second that anyone's flying anywhere to get there in good time. It'll be a long coach journey. It'll be a long coach journey back. And you just hope that when you're there trekking back home after 90 minutes plus of effort and endeavour, that you've done it and you come back with 3 points in your pocket.
Yeah, this is the Don Goodman derby, of course, Don.
Yes.
Exeter last week were worthy winners in the Devon derby. How much confidence does that give you going into a game, your next game, when you beat your arch rivals like that?
Well, it was double whammy for them, wasn't it? I mean, to beat your arch rivals is massive. Your arch rivals are also amongst the favourites to be up the top of the league, and actually Plymouth were going along quite nicely as well. So, you know, to beat them 4-0 comprehensively is just a real feather in the cap. But it was a vital win in the grand scheme of what had been happening at Exeter. They'd lost three of the previous five, having gone unbeaten in the first 10 games of the season. So there was a little bit of a wobble going on, really. So it was a very, very timely and very, very welcome win for Matt Taylor and his team. They won't be under any illusions about difficult job, difficult game ahead on the weekend. Gary, I mean, what a mess Gary Bowyer inherited. I think we've got to give him so much credit. It was the club have bestowed upon them the horrible title that they're the only Premier League club operating at this level, former Premier League club. It's not that long ago Bradford City were a Premier League club, and that it just the mess of the last two or three years has just really, really hurt the club as badly as a club can be hurt, really, without going out of business. So Gary Bowyer deserves an awful lot of credit, and I think it'll be an exciting game, top of the table clash, and two teams that I would expect to be up there at the back end of the season.
Yeah, Roger, a lot of expectation on Bradford to deliver promotion after last season's relegation, as we've mentioned, of course. We've touched on it earlier, but from your experience, what is it like to have that expectation on your shoulders when you've been relegated the year before, of course?
It is tough. It doesn't always work out that way, does it? History proves that. But yeah, I mean, they should embrace the pressure, really. Yeah, they have got relegated. They'll be hurt from last season. And that's all I can sort of say from my point of view. You desperately want to get back to the league above, because you're still hurting, really, from relegation. No one likes the relegation. Unless they're sat nicely in the league at the moment, on a half decent run of form, obviously losing their last game out. But Exeter are up there, and again, it should be a good one. This would be an exciting game, but to the pressure of it, yeah, I mean, it should embrace. For me, just embrace the pressure, and they're not doing a Stoke, let's say, that they are at the top of the league. They're there or thereabouts. They just need to keep pushing as they're going, and they'll hopefully find themselves in the mix at the end of the season.
well, as you say, an exciting game, and an exciting weekend of EFL action to look forward to once again. Guys, thanks very much for your time this week, and yeah, have a good weekend.
You're welcome. Too.
The official EFL podcast, the best reaction to all the match action, available every week.